Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartier. In the studio today on this Medical Monday is Dr. Hugh Fisher. Dr. Fisher is a board-certified urologist and practiced for over 40 years. Doesn't look it. He's with the Urological Institute of Northeastern New York with a community care physicians group in Albany. He specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of prostate cancer. Dr. Fisher earned his medical degree from the St. Louis University Healthcare Center and completed his internship and residency at Fletcher Allen Healthcare in Burlington, Vermont, and at the Albany Medical Center. He also completed a fellowship in urologic oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Center in New York. Hugh Fisher, an old friend and a wonderful man. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Alan. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well,
Medical Monday.
We love having you here. Look, this is going to be a huge show. The number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You're going to want to get in early. I'm telling you that, folks, because if you don't, at the end, you won't get in. It'll be that simple. I'd love to have you call. Prostate cancer, of course, is one of the things that people die of. But you were telling me earlier that if you catch it early enough, there's a 90% cure rate.
That's correct, Alan. We know that prostate cancer is the number one cancer in men, exclusive of basal cell skin cancer. So it's by far and away the most common cancer. Our dilemma with prostate cancer is that most men with prostate cancer don't know that they have it, and they're probably destined not to die of prostate cancer. But that brings up dilemma number two, and that's that prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in men. So there we have the number one cancer in incidence and the number two cancer in terms of deaths, but there's a big disparity between the two. The risk of having prostate cancer for an average man in his lifetime is about 1 in 6. It's more common than that in African Americans and less common in Asians. The chance, however, of dying of prostate cancer is 3%, or much less than the 16% that you would say 1 in 6 is roughly 16% that would have the disease. The risk of dying of prostate cancer is a lot less than that. So what that means that is only 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 men are actually facing mortality from prostate cancer. So there's no doubt that we can catch it early, but the dilemmas here are currently the tests that we go through to detect prostate cancer. Are they worth it in terms of finding the cancer early?
Well, if you're it's certainly worth it.
Correct. If you're one of the patients that has the cancer, but we've been very much more sophisticated these days in terms of how we evaluate patients. First of all, for the risk of prostate cancer. Secondly, if they have prostate cancer, giving them options. For example, some men we recommend active surveillance. In other words, you do have prostate cancer, but you don't have one that looks like it's going to kill you. On the other hand, we may find one early, caught only by early detection, which is life-threatening, and we would say definitely get that one treated. So we're getting a little more sophisticated in this whole plethora of options for prostate cancer. It's a very heterogeneous disease and does take a lot of discussion, and that's why we wanted to discuss it today with the listeners.
Well, that's right. I want to make two points here. I have been deficient in making them. If you want to, you can email us at, with your questions and comments at WAMCVoxPop, WAMCVoxPop, and you can email us at VoxPop. I'm sorry. You can email us at VoxPop@WAMC.org. Email us at WAMC.org. There are a lot of other ways to do this, to communicate with us on Facebook and other things, but I'm not going to tell you about them. Okay, so email us if you want to. Now, the next thing I wanted to say is, this is probably bad information, Hugh, but I heard that if you live long enough, you're going to get prostate cancer. Is that true?
That's probably true. Now, this is by autopsy studies, which indicate that up to 100% of men at age 100 would have prostate cancer. And you can almost go by decade working backwards, 90% at age 90, 80% at age 80. So if you look hard enough within a prostate, you can find cancer. Now, as I said, the vast majority of men with prostate cancer don't even know they have it, and we're not concerned about those men. We are concerned about the ones that actually elevate the screening test, which is the prostate-specific antigen, or PSA test.
Does that work? I mean, I've seen different things on this, the PSA. Mine is, I don't want to brag, but quite low.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
So,
well, we know that it's probably the best test right now to detect prostate cancer. One problem is that it's not perfect. And there are different established normals for PSA. But it really has to be individualized, what the sort of the risk assessment of having prostate cancer. And what we found is that most men with an mildly elevated PSA don't have prostate cancer.
What do they got?
They actually have what's called BPH, or benign prostatic hyperplasia. Because remember, PSA, or prostate-specific antigen, is a protein produced by the prostate, but it doesn't have to be produced by cancer, by prostate tissue. It is produced in higher concentrations in prostate cancer, and that's what leads to help us with the detection of prostate cancer.
So you got a number, and in other words, if it's over 4 or over 3 or whatever.
Yeah, we've gotten a little bit away from that in terms of what's normal and what's not normal, because studies have shown that because of the high prevalence of the disease, that you can find prostate cancer in a certain percentage at even under 3. So the yield of a biopsy at a value of 3 is the same as the value of 4, and it goes underneath that too. Even you can find prostate cancer at any level. But having said that, as the PSA does rise, the risk of prostate cancer rises.
So what's the highest number you've ever seen, Dr. Hugh Fisher, in doing this work?
Oh, in prostate cancer?
Yeah.
Well, up in the thousands.
Really?
For example,
4,000. 4,000?
Right. Now, this would be a gentleman that comes in with advanced prostate cancer. And let me describe advanced prostate cancer to you. This is typically a patient that comes to the emergency room with severe bony pain because the cancer spread to the bones. They come with weight loss. They might come with urinary retention or hematuria, blood in the urine. And so it's an advanced case.
And urinary retention means you can't pee?
Correct. Huh. Correct. Requires a catheter to drain the bladder.
So of all those people who are out there who are having trouble peeing now at this age, I want to reassure them, right, that they don't necessarily have prostate cancer.
Absolutely. And the most common cause of that would be a benign enlarged prostate, because prostate cancer tends to start in what we call the peripheral zone or backside of the prostate, which is not immediately adjacent to the urethra. Now, the BPH, the zones of the prostate that give rise to benign enlargement and impinge or block the urethra are closer to the urethra. So the most common, I don't want to reassure men out there, but I do want to say that if you can't void very well, it's probably not because of prostate cancer, but it could be, and you certainly need to be checked for that.
Okay, and the way you're doing this now is you're checking on us is, first of all, the usual digital thing, lean over, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and then the second thing is if you suspect something, then you're getting your needle out, right?
Well, partially correct. If you eliminate PSA entirely and just do physical exams on patients that come to the office, if you find any lumps or bumps, nodules, if you will, in the prostate, then you are obligated to biopsy.
Yeah.
Because you can pick up a prostate cancer by a simple digital rectal exam. The PSA adds to that. So having a normal digital rectal exam or normal prostate by feel does not eliminate the risk of prostate cancer. And 80 to 90% of the cancers that we find these days have normal prostates on rectal exam.
Interesting.
So rectal exam is not such a good screening tool, but it needs to be done. as complementary to the blood testing, which is the PSA.
Very interesting. So urologists, isn't one of the requirements in medical school, if you want to be a urologist, your fingers have to be thin? No.
No.
It's a very
right.
bad joke. Yeah. Okay. And
not in the books I had.
And here we go. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back with Jeff and Bob and Bob, probably in Bob and Bob. We'll be right back.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, for more than 30 years providing comprehensive cancer care in your community, with locations in Albany, Latham, Troy, Rexford, Amsterdam, and Hudson, NewYorkOncology.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, Berkshire.coop. Ellis Medicine, providing primary care for New York's Capital Region. Reinventing healthcare one patient at a time, ellismedicine.org. 10,000 Villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, featuring fairly traded home decor and gifts handcrafted by artisans around the world. 10,000villages.com for additional store locations. And Kerry Haddad Gallery, presenting playful, colorful works on wood, plaster, and Play-Doh. On view August 21st through September 21st. Open daily, kerryhaddadgallery.com.
And we're back with Dr. Hugh Fisher. It is a compliment to you, sir, that all five phones are ringing right now. And I'm going to read one piece of email, and you'll answer it fast because we want to get back to the phones here. How often should you have your prostate checked digitally by your doctor? Is it true that it is no longer recommended that you get checked each and every year at checkup time?
Person is that emailed, but they're partially correct. You should have a good baseline digital rectal exam along with your initial PSA testing. If that's normal, it's not mandatory that that be repeated every year, but it certainly should be repeated as the PSA is monitored over the years. The digital rectal exam has actually disappeared from recommendations from certain recommending bodies, such as the American Academy of Family Physicians. The American Urologic continues to recommend that. The National Comprehensive Cancer Network also recommends that a digital rectal exam be performed. But the caller is partially correct that it doesn't have to be done each time in light of a normal PSA testing, but also family history in this disease is very important too. And I want to emphasize.
Is that right? So if you're if you have a primary relative who had it, you know, your father had it, your brother
correct.
Had it, yeah.
Then the exam, although a bit uncomfortable, is very cost effective in terms of picking up prostate cancer. Very reassuring in terms of any interval growth of the prostate. And I continue to do it on an annual basis, but that's my bias and my training. But the call is partially right. If you look at evidence-based medicine, which we all try to do these days, the digital rectal exam does not have to be done every year.
No,
but it should be done at some point.
Yeah. Interesting. You were also mentioning very quickly, because we got everybody on the phones here, but you were also mentioning a new advance, which is that in addition to doing some of the advanced stuff, you do MRIs.
Correct. We've changed our algorithm for biopsy now. So as you said earlier, so if the prostate doesn't feel right, you do a biopsy, right? And I
right.
said, well, no, that's not right, because... it is right for that. But the other thing we do is check the PSA. But in either case, let's say the PSA test, which we said doesn't have an absolutely rigid cutoff, but has to be somewhat individualized. If the PSA is elevated, let's take a hypothetical example of 6, and the digital rectal exam feels normal and the patient is 50 years old. Well, that's a high-risk situation because a 50-year-old man should have a PSA that's about 2.5, 2.5, just by age-specific criteria and looking at thousands of men to know what the normal should be.
But if it's much, much lower, then and you're 73, then the question is, are you safe or are you fooling yourself?
Correct. That's a totally different subject than what you asked me. But the patient over 70 is a key patient, which we'll discuss hopefully by the time we run out of time.
Okay, now look.
Let me ask your question quickly because I hadn't gotten there yet. We do biopsies now. If that patient comes in, say, with a PSA of 6 and needs a biopsy, we do one other step these days, and that's to do an MRI of the prostate. And the MRI may be normal or abnormal. If the MRI shows areas that are at high risk for prostate cancer, we do what we call MRI fusion. We take that MRI data, and this is a 3.0 Tesla magnet, which we have in Latham. We have it at Albany Medical Center, too, where we also spend a lot of time. And we can then fuse these images. The MRI image is fused with the traditional ultrasound that we use to direct the biopsies. And now we're getting a little better targeting. We're able to actually see within the substance of the prostate, see abnormal signals on the screen, target them and outline them, and then biopsy those specific areas. And this is shown to have a much larger yield of prostate cancer. And also, the MRI can see these tumors better than the ultrasound. So now we're targeting areas that may have high-grade cancer. Remember we said that most men are not destined to die of prostate cancer that have the disease, but the MRI is helping us sort out high-risk prostate cancer from low-risk prostate cancer. So that's the latest development in
and it's expensive,
in doing biopsies.
By the time you get done with MRI...
Well, you can charge whatever you want these days for any test, but what the insurance companies pay is actually a lot less.
That's a whole different story.
So it is somewhat cost-effective.
Okay, we're going to take some calls now. Jeff in North Bennington. Okay, Jeff, what do you got?
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about kidney stones. I had kidney stones 3 years ago, had one stuck above my bladder, and it had to be retrieved surgically. The CAT scan showed another remaining kidney stone in one of my kidneys, but it was smaller. And the recommendation was that every year or so, take a regular X-ray, which they don't show up if they're small, but if it starts showing up on the X-ray, then the stone would be growing in that kidney. And I guess my question is just sort of what the doctor's recommendation. Does that seem like a logical follow-up to check it that often? Just kind of curious if that would be your recommendation or if that would be what you would recommend doing.
No, I think that's a perfectly reasonable recommendation. The first stone, we don't do very much in terms of follow-up. You had that treated, taken out, probably analyzed. I suspect it's a calcium oxalate stone, which is
exactly
the most common type. And then you have a small stone in a kidney. So one thing you need to be educated about kidney stones and the fact that having had one, you'll probably never mistake the symptoms for anything else down the road.
No, and it was stuck there actually for months, irritating the urinary tract, trying to get into the bladder, and it just never passed. That's why they finally decided to go in and take it out. So yeah, you don't mistake that.
Yeah, and secondly, your doctor's done a risk assessment for any further stones. Like you may have a family history of stones or not, and so that you're not in any big trouble as long as if you did analyze the stone. If it's a calcium stone, we generally recommend hydration and drinking
a lot of water. Yeah,
lots of water, and then increasing your citrate, which would be in a lemon juice or even diet orange soda now has high citrate. So you want to get your citrate level up, which helps those stones dissolve. But I agree with what your doctor said to check it periodically.
Jeff, I wish I could give you more time, but we're really running behind here. Thank you so much.
Just one quick question,
okay,
and it may be for other people as well. Bubbles in the urine, any indication there?
In terms of kidney stones, no, but there are other issues
with
bubbles.
Well, what if you pee and you have bubbles?
You should have a formal urinalysis done by your doctor. So that involves a dipstick to check for screening and then actually a microscopic exam, too, and make sure there's no bacteria in there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Jeff. You're welcome.
Have a great day. Yep. Bye.
Okay, we'll go to Bob in Holland Patent. Okay, Bob, you're on.
Yes, I'm being treated now for prostate cancer. I'm Alan's age, and I'm in my second week of getting radiation treatments. for the prostate cancer. I went to the doctor a year ago, and he discovered I had a kidney bladder infection, as well as a fistula attaching that through a black mass to the colon, which had to be removed before they could do anything with the prostate. And that, following that, I had a blocked carotid artery, which had to be corrected first. So now I'm getting the treatment. And after which, all I had bubbles in the urine as well. And I had a bladder kidney infection that took them 8 months to get under control before they could even do the two surgeries. And so at any rate, now I'm at the point where I'm getting the treatment. And my numbers at one time were between 3 and 4. And now, the last I was told 2 weeks ago, they're up to 7. And,
okay, Bob, I don't want to rush you, but what's the question?
How effective is this radiation treatment? What is the prognosis of that?
Well, I think need a little bit. Your PSA was about 7 when you started before the radiation?
Yes.
Do you know your Gleason score or your Gleason grade?
No, I don't recall.
And do you know what the digital rectal exam showed? Was her prostate very lumpy and enlarged, or was it?
It was very definitely enlarged. Yeah. I had to have the catheter at the beginning. Sure. That was swelled. I couldn't urinate when I went in the office a year ago.
Did they give you hormone therapy as well? Did you get anything to reduce the size of the prostate?
I'm taking pills for that, Flomax.
Yes.
And that seems to control, so I'm able to urinate all right.
That's to help you void better, right?
Yes.
So the answer to your question is radiation is an effective alternative. And one reason, I know Alan's only about 55, as I recall, but as one gets older and has more comorbidities, we tend to use radiation more frequently. In your case, you've actually segued with the previous caller in terms of bubbles in the urine.
Yeah, exactly.
And a fistula certainly can cause that, but ultimately they operated on you maybe several times. And surgery for you, and you had the carotid surgery as well, so that you're not the greatest candidate for a surgery to remove the prostate. It does put you in a little higher risk pool or higher risk category. So radiation for someone over 70, for example, and with these what we call comorbidities is a very nice option. And once they get you voiding with the Flomax and get that under control, then the beam therapy can be given with good success. Actually, the doses are quite high these days. The technique is called image-guided radiation therapy or intensity-modulated radiation therapy, and it's very accurate and well-tolerated in terms of irritation of the rectum and the bladder, and it can be very effective. So I think you're going to be just fine. From what limited knowledge I have of your case, I think you're in good shape.
Bob,
yes.
I have to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay, let's go to Bob in East Otis. Bob, you're on.
Yes, I just had a visit with my urologist. I have an annual visit. And I first want to tell you that I do have a nodule on my prostate, but I've had that for about 15 years, as long as I've been seeing this urologist. But recently, my latest PSA tests and just showed an increase. Usually my PSA is 1.1 to 1.2. This time it was 2.2. He wants me to take another blood test, which I did, but I didn't get the results of yet. Mm-hmm. And he said that if it's still at 2.2, he wants to do a biopsy. Now, I had a biopsy under similar circumstances about 8 or 10 years ago, and it revealed nothing. So I'm reluctant to go for another biopsy. What would you recommend?
How old are you, sir?
70.
70 years old. Okay, so at 70, you're kind of approaching the age when we are a little less aggressive about diagnosing prostate cancer. The important thing you told me is that you had a nodule detected 8 or 10 years ago. The important thing there is if the same doctor is examining the prostate every year,
yes,
and if the nodule hasn't changed, that's very good, and you've had a negative biopsy in the past. Doesn't mean there isn't prostate cancer there, but it certainly helps the cause. It means that you're probably about 90% out of the woods. The second thing he's doing is tracking you appropriately with the PSA. Now, 1.2 to 2.2 in a year is a change, and we generally tolerate about 0.75 of a point a year over a two-year period. And you've apparently had only a one-year period from 1.2 to 2.2, so it's gone up 1 point in one year. So that definitely is a red flag. On the other hand, you're 70 years old and your PSA is only 2.2. I assume you're not taking any PSA-lowering drugs like finasteride or Avodart. Are you taking anything like that?
No, I'm taking oxybutynin and alfuzosin.
Okay, and those are for your avoiding symptoms.
Yeah.
And the other question would be the size of the prostate. Has your doctor told you have an enlarged prostate?
Slightly enlarged.
Slightly enlarged, okay. So you're not in any tough shape, but it definitely needs a follow-up. And what we'd like to do is obtain a PSA track record. And you've told me that he's been following it for several years, which is excellent. And he now can look at that total data continuum and decide if that jump from 1.2 to 2.2 is significant. There's a good chance that on repeat you'll be back to 1.2, I suspect, in your case.
Do they get it wrong every once in a while?
Yes, there's a variation in the test, and we see wide variation, so we always repeat it before a biopsy. So your doctor's done the right thing in terms of repeating repeating it. I don't think you necessarily need a biopsy, but he certainly needs the discussion about the possibility. Now, there are other things that can be done before you had a biopsy, and you're a perfect candidate for what I was just talking about with the MRI fusion. In terms of being 70 years old, and the fact that most prostate cancers are low-grade and not life-threatening, you'd be a good candidate to have an MRI, which is a fairly non-invasive. You just lie in a tube. It's not the real noisy hammer type of claustrophobic tube MRI. It's almost like a CAT scanner. So it's more comfortable for patients. And we do what we call multi-parametric MRIs. So in some cases like yourself, you've already had a biopsy, and the biopsy was negative, and the digital rectal exam hasn't changed appreciably, and we're only dealing with the PSA, I'd say MRI would be a logical next step.
Are they all doing it now?
If it continues to rise.
Are the major centers doing MRIs now?
It's available in most centers. The MRI, however, the MRI fusion is right now not in very many centers. We may be the only people in the area that are doing it at this point. It's being done in New York. I know there's a unit in Syracuse, but it's really the software and the expense to get started on this that most hospitals are not offering it now, but I'm sure they will be shortly.
Well, my doctor is affiliated with Mount Sinai in New York City, so I'm sure that
I think they're doing it there, I know some of New York hospitals in this area, I believe, at present time, we are the only ones that are offering it.
For Bob from East Otis, thanks for the call. Appreciate it
very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to Donna in Albany. Donna.
Hi, Ellen. Before I get into the story, I just wanted to say, I'll start with very briefly. I lost my husband last year to prostate cancer. 25 years after I lost my father to prostate cancer, both my dad and my husband were diagnosed at the same age and the same stage of prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. My question, I have two questions related to this. My husband was really up on his health and would never have turned down a prostate exam. He was on top of everything. My dad, on the other hand, was kind of scared, and, you know, when you're urinating blood, I mean, that's something that you really should get looked at. But my husband was different, and his cancer went undetected because he went to a doctor, an orthopedist, because he was a soccer referee, and the doctor told him that the radiating back and hip pain that he had was due to the soccer refereeing that he was doing, and that it was arthritis. And he gave him a very crude, X-ray exam, and that's a very crude diagnostic tool. you know, 2 years later, he somehow gets the right person who says, this is an, you know, you need to have an MRI. And he was diagnosed at D4. My dad had been at D5 before they changed the scales up there. And, you know.
So, Donna, I'm sorry for interrupting, but because there are so many people on the line, please give us a question. Yeah.
Here's the question. First question is, has the diagnostic diagnostic procedure gotten better over the years? I mean, we're talking 25-year, you know, lapse in between two men dying. And the other question is, why do doctors not know about cancer symptoms, ubiquitous as it is? Why did this orthopedist not know that that's a, you know, that's a sign of cancer?
Okay, now there's the question here. Let's get an answer. Yeah.
Well, let me take the second one first. Yeah. Often the, you know, he's going to a specialist, and they're very narrow in their focus. And any specialist, although we have many orthopedic surgeons that do pick up advanced prostate cancer, they're kind of focused on arthritis and other issues. And he did take appropriate X-rays and things like that. But the detection really should probably be more in the ballpark of the primary care physician. The physician that has been taking care of your dad, and apparently he may not have had one, or he may only gone sporadically and not had routine health maintenance, unlike your husband.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly some things were done to rule out prostate cancer and or bone cancer per se, and that's why he did the standard imaging. Now, an orthopedic surgeon generally will not do a digital rectal exam, which may have shown something. He typically will not order a PSA. And again, this is more in the purview of the primary care physician.
But so, also one of the problems with specialization.
And one of the problems with specialization is you get specialized, you know, might get focused. Now, your husband, on the other hand, I don't know the circumstances of his diagnosis. But so what's changed in terms of the whole field? Well, this is your father and not his father. I don't think, did he have prostate cancer on his side of the family, your husband?
No.
He did not. Okay. So our recommendations have changed a little bit in someone like your husband in the last 25 years. And we've had PSA now for 25 years, came in 1987, but widespread clinical use in the 90s. So we have had these assays that can pick up prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The change is that instead of having mobile vans hawking, get your PSA testing here, and prostate cancer screening clinics like we used to do, for example, mm-hmm. on Father's Day, and we had screening clinics that were widespread throughout the Capital District, in looking on as a crusade of looking for this disease, mm-hmm. we've changed more to a risk-adjusted approach where we do discuss the pros and cons and risks and benefits with patients and say, you're now 45 years old. Do you want us to check a PSA? And here are the pros and here are the cons. So we're having more discussions with patients. So the big change is that not everybody is having mass screening for PSA. The PSA is still remains our primary test, and we still, as a urologist, I do recommend that it be done at least as a baseline. But now we have more specific guidelines to try to increase the benefits and decrease the risks. That's the biggest change.
Hey, Donna, I am so sorry. We've got to stop because we're up against a mandatory break, but thanks for the great call.
Oh, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Yeah, bye-bye.
Great. Thank you.
Support comes from St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose stmarys.com. Stewart Shops, we are closer to you, with over 3,000 different items to choose from. High Meadow School, Stone Ridge, New York, working to nurture early learners ages 1 to 5 through play, hands-on discovery, and the arts, highmeadowschool.org. And The Linda, featuring Jennifer McMullen, presents a comedy show, Saturday, September 6th at 8 p.m., thelinda.org.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're going into the lightning round, meaning because we have a lot of calls today, we're going to try to get to each person, but don't expect a huge response in terms of time. Dr. Fisher is always very careful, let's remember this. Okay, so here's the deal. There are two free phones right now, 1-800-348-2551, and we'll go to Albert in Steventown. It's the only one in America, you know. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling about the overactive bladder. I've been unlucky with the treatment so far, and you can imagine I'm an unhappy camper as a result. The treatments have been medications, which I have not responded well to, the Kegel exercises, and biofeedback. And then I've heard from my own urologist about some invasive procedures, which I haven't really explored at any.
But this is, let me just get this straight, so that all of us can get it. This is because you pee too much at night, for example?
That's, yes.
Okay.
And day and night.
Day and night, okay. Mm-hmm.
So thus far, the treatments have not been successful.
Okay, we'll go to Hugh Fisher. Hugh.
Okay. Now, I assume you've had sophisticated diagnostic testing for this,
because
you're pretty far down the algorithm for treatment of overactive bladder. Did your testing reveal any bladder factors or urethral factors?
No, I don't know what particular factors you're referring to, but I guess... since those other treatments were all tried, I was a good candidate for those treatments.
Right. Well, you've been treated, but the question is, have you had all the diagnostics that you could have now?
In the office, I've had, I thought, everything they could throw at me.
Yes. Urodynamic testing, then?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Well, the only, it's a difficult issue, and you've had voiding diaries and things like that, I assume,
yes,
to find out what your fluid intake and
yes.
You've had a neurological exam,
yes,
to make sure that's all fine.
Yes.
But sometimes they were talking about an invasive procedure would be like a pacemaker in the heart. There's a pacemaker
right.
called InterStim that can
right.
be implanted in the sacral nerve roots and mm-hmm. give it a signal to cut down on the frequency of the sort of the trigger points to the bladder, so that your bladder doesn't get a signal of having to urinate very frequently. So
yes.
It's called an InterStim, which you might look into with your doctor.
Does it work?
It's a special, yeah, it actually does work. The research is about 25 years old. It's been going on forever, but the clinical trials came in the 90s, and now it's a fairly common treatment for
wow.
this gentleman's problem called InterStim.
Well, a lot of people get up in the middle of the night a lot of times.
Yeah, well, you got to find out why, and it's not for everybody, but it sounds like you're more or less end stage, and you should talk to your doctor about InterStim placement.
InterStim placement. Albert, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Lenny in Kinderhook. Lenny, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Alan.
Yep.
Some time ago, my family practitioner told me I had the cardiovascular system of a 20-year-old and the prostate of a 90-year-old. So it's been it's quite enlarged and has been for a long time. And I've been taking finasteride and tansulosin. I took the name drugs before that. And my concern is during the day I'm fine, and at night I can't void, but I feel like I have to get up to go to the bathroom, and I often have fluid, and it takes a long time, and I don't get any sleep. I'm up 2, 3, 4 times a night, and I wonder if it's the timing of the medication I'm taking, but I don't want this to happen during the day also. So, it's lack of sleep. It's really getting to me.
Okay, here's the answer.
Well, usually these drugs are 24-hour drugs, so it doesn't make a big difference when you take them. We generally have you take the tamsulosin at night, however, because there can be a mild decrease in blood pressure. And,
yeah.
and typically,
I have no problems with that, yeah.
You typically take that before you go to bed, is that correct?
Yeah, in the evening.
And how old are you now?
I'll be 66 in a couple months.
66. Well, it's also possible that you just need an operation. You've had medical management here, maximal medical management, which is to be on the two drugs. There's one other, we do put patients on the overactive bladder drugs, particularly at night, if they have your symptoms of say, nocturia, which is getting up at night, and then the urge to go, you know, during the night, as long as you're emptying your bladder.
It takes forever to do that.
Yeah. It sounds like you should be evaluated for surgery.
And the surgery is, Doc?
Well, there's two ways to do it. You can do a laser of the prostate, which is enjoying some popularity, or you can actually have what we call a roto-rooter, where tissue is removed with a small cutting loop, which is done very safely now, that has a vaporizing and cauterizing effect and also removes tissue to be sure that it's not cancerous.
This is called biopsy the tissue?
Yeah, for biopsy the tissue. The thing with the laser is it does get the channel open, and it's merely a matter of removing obstructing prostate tissue. Mm-hmm. And men like yourself have a dramatic improvement when it comes down to that. We've stalled the need for surgery in many patients and even improved the quality of life by using the medications, but for some patients, it just isn't the answer.
Mm-hmm. So. Hey, I wish I could give you more time, Lenny.
That seems like a good answer to me. So,
it does.
All right.
It does.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Kathy in Kingston. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. Dr. Fisher operated on my husband for prostate cancer, and I think he's a pretty great guy. I just want to warn people that my husband had a PSA of 14 with no symptoms whatsoever. So I just think men should be careful.
Well, isn't 14 a symptom?
Well, it's a laboratory abnormality, but it's not a symptom. A symptom is something that's specifically bothering the patient.
So if you have blood in your urine, that's a symptom.
Blood in the urine is a symptom.
Anything like that.
Yeah. No, this is how we pick up most of our prostate cancers these days, is with the PSA testing. In 14, we would certainly go after a PSA of 14.
Yeah.
But the most patients that we operate on are really picked up because of the elevated PSAs, or something incidental has gotten them to the doctor's office and then the test has been done, some other symptoms.
Interesting. Yeah. Kathy, we're sort of in a rush here. What do you got? Anything else?
Just that none of the tests even caught that it had gotten out of the prostate, and that was a shock. Don't know what's going to happen. I'll let you go.
Thank you very much,
Kathy.
Hope
you're doing well.
Okay. Let's go to Mark in Copaic Falls. Mark, you're on.
Hi, I'm having problems voiding, and I'm taking Avodart and Flomax, but my doctor has recommended one of the surgical procedures you talked about, the scraping, mm-hmm. or you called it roto-rooter.
Yep.
And I was just wondering what the risks and successes of that are, and versus the laser.
Well, both do the same thing. The idea is to remove obstructing prostate tissue. The prostate surrounds the urethra. Men void right through the urethra, and as the prostate enlarges with age, which happens to all of us over time, there is constriction of the urethra. So both techniques are to remove obstructing prostate tissue. The laser. In randomized trials comparing the two tests has shown a little bit less blood loss, although blood loss with the actual roto-rooter procedure, which is called the transurethral resection of the prostate, is relatively low these days as well because of improved technology and equipment. So the blood transfusion rate is in average-sized prostates is very low. So there is a little bit less blood loss with the laser. Disadvantage of the laser is that you don't have tissue to look at to see if there's prostate cancer.
Interesting.
And the laser can actually give more irritation to the prostate, so you'd have more burning frequency, urgency afterwards. Having said that, I think the decision rests with the physician who's using the technology, and a good laser surgeon is about the same as a good transurethral resection surgeon.
So our problem, Mark, is that we're almost out of time, and we want to get a couple of other people in. So thank you very much for calling, and stay away from Bashbish. That's just going to make you want to Gomer.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Let's go to Christina in Lee. Okay, Christina, you're on.
Hi there. About a year and a half ago, I started juicing a high amount of leafy green vegetables for health and wellness. And 6 months ago, I started with my first bout of kidney stone issues. And for 6 months, I've had three separate procedures, and my kidneys are still full. I was wondering if you've heard of any correlation or have seen any correlation between high oxalate vegetables and getting kidney stones.
Well, certainly. You've hopefully had a very sophisticated workup for kidney stones at this point, which would involve 24-hour urine collections that are sent to a lab and looking for oxalate, and then you should do anything
Correct.
To reduce oxalates.
Okay.
Reduction of tea is one of the easiest ones. That's a high oxalate food. But,
okay.
You just have to look at the content of the food that you're eating and try to cut down on it. And we like low calcium in terms of cheese and milk and drinking lots of water, but certainly oxalate reduction. The opposite tack is to increase the citrate, which helps oxalates dissolve.
Citrate, like in oranges?
Correct. Oranges, lemons are particularly good. Yeah. Lemon juice is excellent.
Okay.
And also diet orange soda. I think Polar.
Diet orange soda.
That I want to plug, but
boy,
I think
good.
Diet orange soda is high in citrate.
Okay.
But the thing that we have people do is take lemonade, fresh lemonade, but there's also a lot of sugar in lemonade.
Yeah.
So lemon juice, 20, not ounces, but at least, let's say 30 cc's, an ounce or so of lemon juice per day might help.
Wow.
Or squeezed lemons. You can squeeze fresh squeezed lemons can help you too.
A lost art. But, and lime?
Lime, not so good.
Not so good.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Ah. Right. But avoid the tea. And it sounds like that vegetable's got to go that's giving you the high oxalates.
Christina, thank
okay.
you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We are raising the clock here. Let's go to Mel in Highland. Mel, can you give it to us in the shortest possible fashion?
Okay. So I have a 96-year-old father. He used to have an enlarged prostate, and he's been on Bomax and various things like that. But as a matter of fact, this morning he had an ultrasound showing that the prostate is much smaller. But his main problem is urinary retention. He was unable to avoid. He was retaining about 300 post-void residual, 300 cc's. And my question is, he's concerned about damaging his kidneys. You know, he's not particularly uncomfortable with 300 cc's, but he's worried about, you know, it backing up and damaging his kidneys. And no. I'm assuming at 96, you're probably not doing any surgical procedures.
Yeah, most likely would not be anxious to do surgery, but 300 is okay. As long as he's happy, I would let it be. And as long as he doesn't have urinary infections and periodically somebody's checking his kidney function just with a simple BUN and creatinine, that might be checked every 6 to 12 months. Also, an ultrasound of the kidneys would be sure that there's no backup or back pressure to the kidneys calling what we call hydronephrosis. But I would say at 96, 300 cc's, if his urine's not infected, more power to dad. Let him go.
Thank you, Mel.
Appreciate
it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Sorry.
And when you say 300 cc's, 300 cc's of what?
Urine left over after voiding 300 cc's.
Yeah.
So we look at what we call balanced voiding. If he voids, say, 500 cc's and has 300 left over, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. We have almost no time. We can try to sneak one in. Jeff in Amsterdam, you got to make it real fast because we're out of time. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to make sure that the doctor is aware and that other urologists might recommend at-home prostate massage to treat lower urinary tract symptoms from BHP, which I have done successfully now for nearly 2 years, and eliminated the symptoms.
So you're a prostate massager professional, or are you,
not quite. But when I was at my annual physical 2 years ago, I told the doctor I wanted to do something about those symptoms because I treated them with salt palmetto successfully for 15 years, but the dose of salt palmetto was getting so high. She said, try acupuncture. I Googled that, got prostate massage, found a device, bought it, and then more recently I've become aware of a study from Columbia University, Department of Urology in 2009, that really validates that it's a very high percentage of men are
okay. Jeff, I'm so sorry. Do you have a couple of words on this?
Well, I may have just learned something, but typically speaking, prostate massage is not in the mainstream of therapy.
Jeff, thank you very much for your great call.
You're welcome. It should be. Thank you.
Okay. We're just about out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in. We did very well. We got to everybody and apologize to no one. We're left on the line. I'd also like to thank Dr. Hugh Fisher, who is having a Coke Zero right now. But I have found that some of the stuff in that makes me want to void even more. Is that a possibility?
Yeah. No, it's just the volume.
Yeah, okay. I'd also like to thank, and support for Medical Monday comes from Topperson, developed to provide relief for those living in pain associated with neuropathy and fibromyalgia, and Topperson.com. And thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Kimba Lipscomb. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. She is terrific, as is Kimba. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. She's terrific also. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. Thank you so much, Dr. Hugh Fisher.
Thank you, Alan.